The following program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Fitchburg, Leominster, Lancaster, Lunenburg, Townsend, Ashby, Ashburnham, Devens, Westminster, Shirley, and Groton. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts and the Lions Clubs of Fitchburg and Lunenburg. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. During the next hour, we'll be reading from the Central and Enterprise newspaper. This is Priscilla Lanigan reading solo today from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. Okay, first up today, flash floods hit Fitchburg and Leominster. Wow. DPW chief says 25-year storm left 3.8 inches of rain by 9 a.m. Wow. The floods of August have arrived in north-central Massachusetts this year, and they are fierce. In Fitchburg, public safety personnel say that nearly 4 inches of rain fell in Fitchburg and the surrounding area by 9 a.m. Monday morning, leaving cars stranded and closing roads. The drenching rainfall rose quickly in Fitchburg and Leominster, where the Route 2 interchange was flooded during the morning commute. The Massachusetts Department of Transportation, MassDOT, reported at 9 a.m. that Merriam Avenue was closed at the Route 2 interchange in Leominster and Fitchburg due to roadway flooding. Route 2 had also been reduced to one lane in each direction. Closures, as of deadline, were expected to remain in place until early Monday evening. From amateur radio broadcasters, the National Weather Service reported manhole covers popping off and water pouring out of Winoosnock Road in Fitchburg, and one car on West Street and Hillary Road at Hillary Road in Leominster that was stuck in water up to the passenger side door, whose occupant needed assistance getting out of the car. On Bemis Road, shortly before 8 a.m., traffic slowed to drive around a 64-gallon waste management bin that had floated into the middle of the roadway. Fortunately, a good Samaritan in a white van put on his hazards, jumped out of his vehicle, and retrieved the toppled bin, so traffic began to move again. The rain eased up within the next 2 hours, but residents agreed that John Fitch Highway was a street to avoid. Police Sergeant Leanna K. Teague, Traffic Unit Supervisor for the City of Fitchburg, commented that John Fitch is our usual spot for traffic issues. Whenever it downpours like this, that area is natural for flooding, she explained. We had it closed temporarily until it dissipates. Another motor vehicle accident occurred on Water Street because of a manhole cover that popped up due to swift water flow. Fitchburg DPW Commissioner Nick Erickson was in contact with resident Lenny Laxo, a former DPW commissioner, who tracked the rainfall, which had started before 5 a.m. By 6:52 a.m., there was 1.6 inches of rain, but the rainfall accelerated so that by 7:52 a.m., 3.3 inches had fallen, and by 8:52, 3.8 inches. If we use NOAA Atlas 14 precipitation data, this works out to be roughly a 25-year, 6-hour storm, Erickson explained. Wow. Most older drainage systems in the city are not sized to handle such an intense precipitation event, and are designed somewhere closer to the 5- or 10-year, 24-hour design storm, or in many cases, significantly less. In Leominster, Mayor Dean Mazzarella's office began calling people in the morning once we saw the forecast to come to work. The city closed some streets, including North Main, but we had done it. We had, quote, done the work before making sure the culverts and drains were clear, he said, adding that it stopped when we were ready for it to stop. Around 8:30, 8:45, the drains were caught up. He chuckles and added, what are you going to do? We're a city surrounded by 12 hills, so when the water comes down, you can't stop it. I guess so. If there's a silver lining, it's that the significant information about the impact of this storm emerged as members of Public Works, Police, and Fire reported back to headquarters. Areas the city will look at for drainage system improvement include Water Street, especially at Duck Mill and Winoosnock Bemis, where we need to upsize portions of the drainage system. Lunenburg Street, John Fitch Highway, and Shea Street are known areas of flooding, while areas of higher elevation, such as Franklin Road, Fifth Mass Turnpike, and lots of bedrock on Oak Hill, are steep terrain and steep terrain produces a lot of runoff. There are swales, drainage inlets, and cross culverts that help, but these are easily overwhelmed with a lot of precipitation all at once. And during late summer and fall, the inlets can easily get clogged with debris. Fitchburg's many brooks, which flow to the Nashua River, also need ongoing monitoring, as some culverts have debris screens which need to be cleaned off or pulled out, such as Birch Brook and Sand Brook, which flows beneath Forest Hill Cemetery and Nikita's Field. Sand Brook, which created a washout in 2023 due to age and construction, emerges at Park Hill Park and then goes back underground at Beach Street and Pratt all the way to the river at Daniel Street. Other areas of the city will address include Overland Street, which runs through private property and beneath Crocker Playground, Westminster Street, before discharging to the river. This water source sometimes becomes overwhelmed and causes flooding and washouts. Okay, doesn't sound good. And from Leominster, a little leader with a big role at Leominster's Italian Festival. Downtown came alive during the fourth annual Italian Festival on Saturday evening, with thousands gathered to celebrate Italian heritage with music, dancing, delicious Italian food, pastries, and drinks. The celebration continued late into the evening as green, white, and red lights sparkled through Monument Square while City Hall glowed in the colors of the Italian flag on a beautiful summer night. Started 4 years ago as a way to celebrate Leominster's strong Italian heritage and bring the community together, the festival has quickly become one of the city's most anticipated summer traditions. For 12-year-old Nico Rosenberg, the evening was a chance to celebrate his heritage while stepping into a leadership role usually reserved for adults. Carrying his clipboard throughout the night as honorary co-chairman, he checked in with organizers, greeted vendors, and helped make sure the celebration stayed on track. Festival Committee Chairman Hank Liscotti and his grandson has been invested in the event since its very beginning. Nico is a very smart, confident, funny, and kind young man who loves his Italian heritage as much as his nonno, grandfather, Liscotti said. He's been interested in the festival since we started it 4 years ago, and last year he asked if he could be the co-chairman. Liscotti believes Nico's passion for his heritage grew even stronger after the two traveled to Italy together 2 years ago. I took him to Italy for 2 weeks, and it really opened his eyes, he said. He was fascinated by everything we saw, especially the Colosseum and the Vatican in Rome and Mount Etna in Sicily. Ever since then, he's had an even greater appreciation for our family's heritage. As another successful festival came to a close, Nico's enthusiasm, attention to detail, and willingness to help reflected the community spirit the celebration was created to inspire, proving that even at 12 years old, great leaders can leave a lasting impression. Yes, they can. Okay, and from Fitchburg and Leominster, I would say Fitchburg and Leominster residents were honored at Commonwealth Pride Awards. The inaugural Commonwealth Pride Awards, hosted by the Massachusetts LGBTQ+ Legislative Caucus, highlighted the collective impact and accomplishments of individuals such as healthcare workers, entrepreneurs, artists, and religious figures in their own communities. Fitchburg residents Will and Jamie D'Arcangelo were thrilled to be two of the over 100 LGBTQ+ leaders, advocates, and educators from across the state who were honored at the June 17th event held at the Massachusetts State House Senate Chamber. What made the honor so meaningful wasn't simply receiving it, it was experiencing it together, Will said of the special moment he shared with his husband. We were recognized equally for our individual contributions and for what we've built as partners. Sitting together in the Senate chamber as equals, not only with one another, but alongside the honorees from every corner of the Commonwealth, was genuinely moving. Will is the pastor of the First Church Unitarian Pastor in Lancaster, and Jamie has been a nurse for many years. State Representative Mike Kushmarek said he was honored to nominate Jamie and Will for the first ever Commonwealth Pride Awards that will now be an annual tradition. Through Jamie's work as a nurse and Will's work as a pastor, they are both fearless champions of the voiceless and most marginalized in our community, Kushmarek said. By putting the well-being of others before themselves, they exemplify the spirit of our community and excellence within the LGBTQ plus population. Will grew up in Fitchburg and graduated from Fitchburg High School in 1987. His husband of 11 years, Jamie, grew up in Worcester, and the two of them met at a party in 2013 and clicked from the very first conversation, Will shared. When asked what kinds of challenges they have faced as a queer couple, especially in regard to the current divisive political climate, Will said relatively few, and we're grateful for that. Of course we worry. We don't want to lose rights that previous generations fought so hard to secure. At the same time, I have faith that the arc of history continues to bend toward greater inclusion, even if progress isn't always linear, he said. Our greatest concern isn't really for ourselves, it's for members of our broader LGBTQ plus community, especially transgender people, who have increasingly become political and social targets. It's a bit complicated celebrating the rights we've gained when people we love are still under attack. He went on to say that while living out loud and proud sounds bigger than it usually is, every day life as an out couple looks remarkably ordinary. From the outside, pride can look colorful, exuberant, and celebratory, but it also looks like fitting into your community without editing your spouse's pronouns while you're referring to them, Will said. It looks like Jamie simply being accepted as the minister's spouse without anyone needing to qualify what that means. It looks like appearing on national television with our adoptive daughter and the fact that we're a same-sex couple being the least interesting part of the story. For us, it's less about being out than about not hiding, he continued. It's less about being proud in the sense of drawing attention to ourselves than about being able to exist comfortably and authentically. That's what equality ultimately looks like, not being exceptional for being gay, just being yourself. State Representative Natalie Higgins helped organize the Commonwealth Pride Awards as part of the Massachusetts LGBTQ plus legislative caucus, something she said she is proud to be a part of. It was an incredibly special day inside the Senate chamber full of joy and celebration, just what we all needed, she said. In a moment when LGBTQ plus rights continued to come under attack, this day was full of hope and joy, celebrating the progress we can make together. It was powerful to lift up incredible community leaders from all across the Commonwealth. Okay, sounds good. And let's see. Lowell and Fitchburg projects building vital connections. Two bridge projects are of decidedly different sizes but of equal importance to the communities and area they serve remain on schedule, if not ahead of their projected completion dates. Those spans will serve as vital artery upgrades for the gateway cities of Lowell and Fitchburg. In Lowell, the Rourke Bridge replacement project progresses as the new bridge platforms expand across the Merrimack River. While in Fitchburg, Mayor Sam Squalia recently disclosed that the River Street Bridge replacement project should be completed by Labor Day at the latest. The Rourke Bridge Summer 2026 update from MassDOT reported the completion of the temporary access platform on the north side of the river off Pawtucket Boulevard, which allows construction crews to focus on the initial three temporary pier cofferdams. A cofferdam, a temporary watertight enclosure, will allow crews to construct the future bridge foundations and piers. The decking of the bridge will be laid on those pier foundations. Installation of the pier cofferdams will continue through August, MassDOT said. Construction of the bridge piers began in July and continues through the end of 2026. The new span will run west of the existing structure, which will be removed once the new bridge opens. The Skanska Jacobs Solution, Inc. design-build project combines final design and construction into a single phase. Last year, MassDOT announced that Skanska was awarded the $303 million contract. A $252 million federal investment will cover a portion of the $303 million cost, with state and local funds making up the difference. The new bridge, which started on the north side of the river off Pawtucket Boulevard by Old Ferry Road, will work its way south past the eastern corner of the Collegiate Charter School of Lowell's Athletic Field, closest to the Wood Street entrance of the current bridge off Middlesex Street in the Highlands. The project entails the construction of a six-span, seven-girder steel bridge with bicycle and pedestrian access. The new bridge, which has a 75-year service life, will be three times as wide as the existing two-lane bridge. The so-called temporary span, which opened in 1985, forms a critical piece of transportation infrastructure over the Merrimack River that links sections of Lowell and provides access to Route 3 and Interstate 495 for motorists of surrounding communities. Other bridge-related work involves companies such as Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon that will relocate telecommunications along Pawtucket Boulevard and Middlesex Street. Meanwhile, in Fitchburg, the River Street project completely replaces the structurally aging bridge structure carrying Route 31 over the North Nashua River. Positioned near Crocker Field and the Department of Public Works garage, the bridge serves as a critical connector to downtown Fitchburg. Aside from the full bridge replacement, the project includes brand new roadway approaches, installing new sidewalks for pedestrians, and full paving, integrating dedicated bicycle accommodations featuring a 5-foot-wide bicycle lane tapering to 4.5 feet at Main Street, and coordinating utility and infrastructure updates along the corridor. River Street has been restricted to one-way traffic during construction, forcing cars going west to take a circuitous detour. The mayor indicated that in the original contract, the opening was listed for June of 2027. While the Lowell project comes with a $303 million price tag, the cost of the Fitchburg project, which began in June 2024, must conform to the $6,339,000 sum allocated for its completion. Squilly acknowledged the inconvenience borne by residents as this project progressed. Bridge projects are complicated, expensive, and disruptive, and we know this closure has affected residents, commuters, businesses, and surrounding neighborhoods, but seeing this project move toward reopening this far ahead of the original schedule is a major step forward. Yes, Fitchburg will soon have that gateway welcoming traffic to its downtown, and in Lowell's case, that day won't come until late 2029 or early 2030, but it will be worth the wait. Okay. Well, it's about a little after 4:15. We'll take a short break, and I'll have more news after this.
Low vision and blind persons in the Worcester area are fortunate to have a support group sponsored by the Massachusetts Association for the Blind in Worcester. The group meets monthly at the Worcester Senior Center and provides information and resources to assist with daily living, assistive technology, transportation, and friendship. For more information, please call Marion at 508-754-0672. Again, that telephone number is 508-754-0672.
And we're back. You're listening to Community News, Fitchburg Lemonster, a production of the Audio Journal. Okay, we'll start with some obituaries. There's quite a few of them here. First up is Flora Cecilia Janssens Robinson, October 7th, 1948 to July 25th, 2026. It is with profound sadness that we announce the passing of Flora Robinson, who died peacefully on July 25, 2026, surrounded by the love of her family. Born on October 7, 1948, in Oakland, California, she spent many years in Leominster, Massachusetts, before living in Antioch, Tennessee, and eventually settling in Pennsylvania to be closer to family. She is lovingly remembered by her son, Bruce Zoldak, daughter Sarah Dorr, and son-in-law Timothy Dorr, her cherished grandchildren, Cheyenne Dorr and Andrew Dorr, her sisters Joyce Janssen Cowett, her brothers Jack Janssens, Tom Janssens, and Mark Janssens, her close family friends, as well as the beloved nieces, nephews, extended family members, dear friends, and her faithful companion, Honey. Flora was preceded in death by her beloved husband, Stephen Robinson, her parents, Edward and Patsy Jansen, her brothers, Eddie Jansen and Timothy Jansen, and her sister, Patricia Kramer. She dedicated many years of her career to child care resources in Fitchburg and later worked for the Sentinel and Enterprise newspaper. She found joy in reading, listening to music, spending time at church, playing bingo, and spending time with those she loved. The family extends its heartfelt gratitude to the compassionate caregivers who provided her with kindness, dignity, and unwavering support, bringing comfort to both her and our family during her final journey. In accordance with her wishes, there will be no public services. A private remembrance will be held by her family. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to her memory to the Gentiva Foundation in support of hospice care. Donations may be made online through the official Gentiva Memorial Giving page. And from Fitchburg, Karen J. Elaine. Karen Joan Gaudette Elaine, 70, of Fitchburg, passed away peacefully on July 28th at the Highlands Life Care Center after a long illness. Services will be private. Please visit www.richardsonfuneralhome.net for more information. Emil F. Morin from Fitchburg. Emil F. Morin regrettably left his wife Elaine after 45 years of marriage on July 26, 2026. Emil entered this world at Burbank Hospital in Fitchburg, Massachusetts on February 17, 1941, 30 minutes after his twin brother Hector. He was a beloved son of Hector and Rose Morin and enjoyed an adventurous childhood in the woods of Lunenburg. He graduated from Lunenburg High School in 1959 and went on to proudly serve his country in the National Armed Reserve for 6 years. Emil worked at Borden Chemical in Leominster until its closing in 1987 and continued to work as a machinist until his retirement. He was a lifelong resident of Lunenburg but enjoyed his vacations to Cape Cod and Aruba. His hobbies included playing hockey, which he did into his 70s, restoring classic cars, friends in the garage, and working around the house. Emil was an honest, kind, respectable, authentic person who loved deeply. His greatest joy was his family and marriage to Elaine. Emil leaves behind 6 children, Emil Morin Jr., Rhonda Storms, Robin Sicard, John Targonsky, David Targonsky, and Karen Targonsky, 9 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. He also leaves his brother, Hector Morin, 4 nieces and 2 nephews. The family would like to express their eternal gratitude to each of his caregivers and to Beacon Hospice, which allowed Emil's final wish to remain in his home possible. The family will be having a private service on August 22nd, and donations can be made to the Pat Brody Cat Shelter in lieu of flowers. Katerina Chirico from Worcester. With profound sadness, we announce the passing of Katerina Chirico, a loving and dedicated wife, mother, and friend to all those whose lives she touched. She left us peacefully on July 31st, 2026, while residing in Worcester. She was born on March 12, 1934, in Giovenazzo, Italy, and emigrated to the United States in 1955. Katerina was married to Giuseppe Chirico on October 29, 1955. She was an industrious woman, spending her professional years as a seamstress at R&M Manufacturing. Just before she retired, she worked at St. Anna Catholic School, where she enjoyed cooking for the students and helping in the preschool classroom. Katerina was passionate about knitting garments for friends and family. She also loved cooking delicious meals. Katerina's undeniable passion for her crafts overflowed into every facet of her life, making her home a haven of warmth and comfort. She was preceded in death by her loving son, Francesco. A mass of Christian burial will be held on Saturday, August 8, 2026, at 10 a.m. in St. Anna Church, 199 Lancaster Street in Leominster. Burial will be private. Calling hours will be held on Friday, August 7th, from 4 to 6 in the Brandon Funeral Home at 305 Winnesnock Road in Fitchburg. Charles E. Reynolds from Ashby. Charles E. Reynolds, 92, of Ashby, passed away peacefully at Fitchburg Healthcare on July 19, 2026. Charles was born in Gardner on June 9, 1934, a son of the late Charles and Elizabeth Byrd Reynolds. He was a lifelong papermaker in Fitchburg until his retirement. Charles loved being outdoors, especially farming and hunting. He is survived by his wife of 74 years, Grace LeBlanc Reynolds, his children, Ken, Alyssa, Chris, and Rodney, many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He was predeceased by his son, Charles Reynolds, Jr. Funeral services will be held privately from the Anderson Funeral Home. Lois Elizabeth Severns. Lois was born in Ord, Nebraska on November 30, 1930. She passed away on June 14, 2026 in Fort Worth, Texas at age 95. Lois was the daughter of Roxy Obel and Jacob William Severns, and she was welcomed by her half-sisters Wilma and Vera. Two more daughters, Charlene and Marion, soon joined the family. The Severn girls, their parents, and their Obel cousins were known in the Ord community for their musical talents. In 1952, Lois earned a B.A. in English from Hastings College, Hastings, Nebraska. Upon graduating, she was honored as one of three students who received the Bronco Award. After teaching high school in English, Lois earned her master's in library science from Denver University, and for the next 35 years, she worked as a reference librarian in New York City, at Kearney State College in Kearney, Nebraska, and in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. She remained at Fitchburg Public Library for 22 years as reference librarian and head of adult services. Survivors are her sister, Charlene, Severns of Lincoln, Nebraska, several nieces, nephews, and as well as their some dear friends. She was predeceased in death by her parents, sisters Wilma Cook, Vera Morton, and Marion Sheehan, niece Shandy, Sheehan Gillette, and grandniece Jessica LaFawn. Pamela T. Lehane from Fitchburg. We remember the spirited life of Pamela T. Roderick Lehane, born in Groton, Mass. On February 8, 1949. She added a dash of pizzazz to our world until July 28, 2026. Pamela was a charismatic personality, a lifelong resident of Fitchburg, and a woman who knew how to enjoy the little moments, whether it was a shopping spree with her granddaughters or a breakfast date with her husband Robert. Pamela's adventurous spirit left a mark on all she encountered. Pam's happiest moments were simple ones, getting her nails done or packing up for a fun weekend in New Hampshire, spending quality time with her beloved family. Pamela was a hard worker. She was employed for many of her younger years at Stewart's Department Store, later working at Seaboard Folding Box Company and Bootwell Owens, where she met her husband, Robert, and finally as a security guard at the Fitchburg Art Museum before her retirement. Pamela is survived by her loving husband, Robert Lehane, and her children, along with several great nieces and nephews. And she was predeceased in death by her parents, Emil and Ruth Roderick, her brothers, Tom and Donald, and her two sisters, Beverly and Marilyn. Join us to honor Pamela's life on Friday, August 7th, 2026, at 10 a.m. for visitation, followed by a small remembrance service at 11 a.m. at the Brandon Funeral Home, 305 Winnusnock Road in Fitchburg. Paul V. McDermott from Fitchburg. Paul Vincent McDermott, 91, of Fitchburg, went to be with our Lord and Savior on July 28, 2026. Calling hours will be held on Tuesday, August 4th, 2026, at Richardson Funeral Home, 106 West Street in Leominster, from 10:30 a.m. The funeral mass will be held afterwards at 11 a.m. at St. Bernard Parish, 333 Mechanic Street in Fitchburg, followed by burial at 12:30 p.m. at St. Bernard Cemetery, 96 Goodrich Street in Fitchburg. And for more information, please visit richardsonfuneralhome.net. Nancy Farah Teferi from Wichita Falls. Nancy Farah Teferi, B. beloved mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and cherished friend of Wichita Falls, Texas, formerly of Leominster, Massachusetts, passed away on July 14, 2026, at the age of 92. She was the daughter of the late Charles Wallace Ferrer and Dorothy Garland Ferrer. Born on May 22, 1934, in Leominster, Nancy grew up in Fitchburg, where she built lifelong friendships and a deep sense of community that would define her life. She graduated from Fitchburg High School, where she served as secretary of the class of 1952 and remained devoted to her classmates for decades, organizing reunions, luncheons, and correspondence for more than 50 years. She later graduated from Fisher Junior College in Boston in 1954. Nancy's greatest love story began next door. She and Captain Charles Enstrom Chuck Teferi, USAF, grew up side by side on Milk Street in Fitchburg, their lives intertwined from the beginning. They became engaged on Christmas Eve, 1953, and married the following year while Chuck was serving in the United States Air Force, beginning their life together that would take their young family to military bases across the country. On October 20, 1966, Chuck was killed in action over Laos during the Vietnam War. His death came as a profound and unimaginable shock. Nancy eventually remarried and welcomed her treasured son, Christopher Bennett, into the family in 1971. Although that marriage ended later, her devotion to her children never wavered. She worked tirelessly to provide them with a home filled with love, security, encouragement, and traditions that became the foundation of their own families. Nancy had a gift for making beautiful things, and an even greater gift for making people feel at home. She delighted in celebrating every holiday, finding joy not only in the occasion itself, but in the traditions that brought people together year after year. A devoted Anglophile, Nancy loved all things British, from the royal family and Downton Abbey to Pride and Prejudice. She happily woke up before dawn with family and friends gathered together to watch every royal wedding, delighted by the pageantry and tradition, and, of course, wearing her homemade English-style bonnet. Professionally, Nancy worked in the president's office of Milton Bradley Company in Springfield and East Longmeadow before joining the public relations department at Lego Systems, Inc. in Enfield, Connecticut, where she retired in 1999. Nancy enjoyed a long and happy retirement. She moved to Wichita Falls to spend her remaining years close to her family. She embraced a new community, formed treasured friendships, and especially cherished her fellow Golden Girls at Royal Estates. Nancy was predeceased by her husband, Captain Charles E. Teferi, USAF, her brother, Philip Garland Ferrer, and her former husband, John Q. Bennett. She is survived by the other great loves of her life, her three children, Susan Begley and her husband, Steve, of Worcester, Mass., Holly Senya of Zeitvogel and her husband, Jeff, of Wichita Falls, Texas, and Christopher Bennett and his partner, Ivy Harmon Bertrandi, of Springfield, Massachusetts. She leaves several grandchildren and great-grandchildren in addition to extended family and friends. Her cremated remains will be interred at Forest Hill Cemetery in Fitchburg. Nancy's family and friends will come together for a celebration of her extraordinary life privately at a later date. For those who wish, memorial contributions may be made to Gold Star Wives of America or the USO. And let's see, just a couple more here. Veronica M. Buono. Veronica, or Ronnie Buono, passed away at her home on July 16, 2026, at the age of 66. Born on June 9, 1960, in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, Ronnie was the beloved daughter of Vincent and Virginia Cody Civita. She graduated from Leominster High School with the class of 1978 and went on to attend Fitchburg State College. Her son Michael was the center of Ronnie's life. Her heart throughout her life. She is survived by her beloved son, Michael Buono, and his wife, Alyssa Buono, of Fitchburg, her cherished grandchildren, her sisters, Virginia Reed of Vermont, Vivian Civita, and her husband, William Boyden of Leominster, her brother, Victor Civita of Leominster, and her sisters-in-law, Linda Buono and Pamela Doig, and her husband, Paul, all of Leominster, with many loving nieces and nephews and her faithful four-legged companion, Honey. She was predeceased by her beloved husband, Michael Buono, her parents, Vincent and Virginia Civita, her brother Vincent Senzo Civita Jr., and her niece Jennifer Young. In her younger years, Ronnie was a gifted athlete. She played field hockey in high school and Fitchburg State College, enjoyed many years playing softball, and was an accomplished skier. Some of her happiest memories were made at Loon Mountain, where her family belonged to a ski club. During one visit, an Olympic representative approached her father and remarked that Ronnie had the talent and potential to become an Olympian. Wow. Calling hours will be held Wednesday, August 5th, I guess that's today, in the funeral home at from 4 to 6 p.m. Okay. Well, it's a little after 4:30, probably time to take another break, and I'll have some more news after this.
Join Cookie in the Dark, heard each and every Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Join Cheryl Cummings and Dale Campbell as they discuss their favorite recipes, and also they do tell jokes. Well, I'm just joking. That's Cooking in the Dark, heard each and every Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. right here on Audio Journal. And they are great. Cheryl and Dale. Oh, yeah. Cook the food, Dale.
And we're back. You're listening to Community News, Fitchburg Lemonster, a production of the Audio Journal. Okay, from Fitchburg, a warrant issued for suspect in Fitchburg fire. Mark Alessia indicted on arson charges for a Myrtle Avenue blaze. A local court has issued a warrant for the arrest of a Fitchburg man in connection with a fire earlier this year at 164 Myrtle Avenue in Fitchburg. On June 18th, Mark Alessia, 39, was indicted in absentia by Worcester Superior Court on charges of arson of a dwelling house, larceny of a motor vehicle, and larceny over $1,200 worth of electronics, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. All three charges were from incidents on February 18th. The fire was one of a series of fires in Fitchburg this spring that was suspected of being set on purpose. For the fire on Myrtle Avenue on February 18th, Fitchburg fire personnel responded at 8:38 a.m. According to then-Fitchburg Fire Chief Dante Suarez, they discovered heavy fire upon arrival. The fire is under investigation by the Fitchburg Fire Department and the Fitchburg Police Department, in addition to the Office of the State Fire Marshal. City and state officials have been investigating a trio of suspicious fires that took place in February on Blossom and Day Streets, as well as the Myrtle Avenue fire, as arson. A press release urged anyone with information or tips to share with the Arson Watch Rewards Program at 800-682-9229, with calls confidential and remaining anonymous an option. Chief Giannini stated in a release at the time, "I'm asking everyone in our community to stay alert and pay attention to anything unusual in your surroundings. If you see something that doesn't seem right, trust your instincts and report it. If you have any information about these incidents, no matter how minor it may seem, please come forward. Even the smallest detail could make a difference." Two of the fires took place in February 14th and 15th in a large apartment building with entrances at 43 Blossom Street and 40 Day Street. Fitchburg firefighters successfully extinguished both fires before they could spread substantially. A third took place on February 18th, about a half a mile away in a multifamily home at 164 Myrtle Avenue. The Fitchburg Fire Department, Fitchburg Police, and State Police assigned to the State Fire Marshal's office are jointly investigating all three of these incidents, State Fire Marshal John Devane said in a release earlier this year. "We've reached the point where we can confidently say they were intentionally set. We have not reached a determination as to whether the fires on Blossom and Day Streets were related, but we always consider a link when suspicious fires are reported in close proximity. Yes, we've had a string of fires over the last few days. They are all under investigation by the Fitchburg Fire Department Arson Squad," said Suarez earlier this year. Whoa. Okay, and from Fitchburg, Fitchburg plans three events, National Night Out, Ready, Set, School, and Housing Summit, coming soon. Okay, the city will celebrate National Night Out, a chance to meet and greet local police officers and other officials on Tuesday, August 4th. Oh, that was yesterday. Never mind. this was, I guess, was free food and was a big hit. But anyway, moving on, the National Night Out, held in cities across the country, is a chance to meet your local police and community organizations. People are encouraged to come together with neighbors, friends, and first responders to strengthen the bonds that make Fitchburg a great place to live. And this is on, this was also on August 4th. Never mind. And the city is also going to hold a Ready, Set, School at a Fitchburg Impact Block Party on August 9th. That hasn't gone by. From noon to 3 p.m. at Riverfront Park, 51 Commercial Street. The free school preparation event will include haircuts and braids, a backpack giveaway, face painting, food and ice cream, a Common Ground basketball clinic, a community art project, a petting zoo, and information on area resources. And the city is planning a Fitchburg Housing Summit 2025 on Saturday, August 15th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Fitchburg Senior Center, 14 Wallace Avenue. This is a free community event, and it connects residents with regional housing resources, home ownership programs, and financing opportunities. Highlights include a lunch and learn session, music, swag bags, a first-time homebuyer panel, and a bank and lender panel to answer questions. There will also be information about MassSave energy savings opportunity, Mass Housing state programs on renting and owning, information from Newview Communities, a nonprofit organization dedicated to creating strong and healthy neighborhoods where residents choose to live, work, and invest, and a session on landlord and tenant education. People are encouraged to attend to discover city services and learn how Fitchburg is becoming more accessible and attractive to new and existing residents. Those who attend will be able to meet with local banks and lenders, attend workshops on budgeting and financing a home, learn how to prepare for home ownership or investment, explore available rental and for sale properties, meet with realtors, developers, and investors, and get expert insight on the current housing landscape. There will also be energy efficiency programs, which include presentations featuring guest speakers like Rusty Daniels, introducing the Energy Saver Home Loan Program for heat pumps, solar, and weatherization upgrades. Resources include direct access to experts on affordable housing and regional sustainable community development. Okay. And let's see, from Townsend, concert brings music to the community. The Townsend Military Band's Thursday, August 6th concert, that's tomorrow, on the Townsend Common will be funded through a grant from the Townsend Cultural Council and the Massachusetts Cultural Council. The evening will also feature a lawn party hosted by the Friends of the Townsend Library. Concert goers can purchase hot dogs, hamburgers, cheeseburgers, popcorn, fried dough, soda, water, and a variety of baked goods. Children attending the concert can also enjoy several games on the common, including the Noodle Smash, Wheel of Fortune, and Egg Game. And they will also have a chance to select a lollipop for an opportunity to win a prize. The Friends of the Townsend Library supports the Townsend Public Library by purchasing passes to museums and local attractions, funding guest speakers and performers, and providing materials and resources not covered by the town budget. Under the direction of Tom Souza, the Townsend Military Band will perform from 7:30 until 9:30 p.m. Okay. And then from Lunenburg, Summer Puzzle Swap returns to the Lunenburg Public Library. Puzzle lovers can refresh their collections at the Lunenburg Public Library's popular Summer Puzzle Swap from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, August 15th in the Wallace Community Room at the library, 1023 Massachusetts Avenue. Starting Monday, August 3rd, community members can bring in completed jigsaw puzzles to the library's front desk and receive swap vouchers in exchange. Those vouchers can be used on the day of the swap to choose new-to-you puzzles from the donated collection. Past swaps have featured more than 600 puzzles, offering plenty of options for all ages and skill levels. Participants are encouraged to arrive before noon to use their vouchers and browse the selection. from noon to 2 p.m., everyone is welcome to stop by and shop the remaining puzzles, even if they did not bring one to swap. Puzzles will be available for a free will donation to the Friends of the Lunenburg Public Library, typically $1 to $3, depending on size and condition. For more information, you can call the library at 978-582-4140. Okay, let's see. This is a Birds of Prey Owls program planned. This is one presentation in Ashburnham and one in Westminster. Families ages 6 and up and bird enthusiasts will have two opportunities during the first week of August to meet live birds of prey and learn about the remarkable adaptations that make them some of nature's most skilled hunters when Wingmasters presents educational wildlife programs in Ashburnham and Westminster. The Massachusetts-based organization, which is dedicated to increasing public understanding and appreciation of North American birds of prey, will offer two presentations featuring live raptors and expert insight into their behavior. Oh, dear. This was held yesterday. I'm sorry. Is there another one? Recommended for children ages 6 and older. The presentation featured live birds. Oh, dear. Let's see. Wingmasters will host another presentation from 4:45 until 5:45 p.m. on Thursday, August 6th. That's not over yet. Good. Called The World of Owls at the Westminster Community Senior Center, 69 West Main Street. For owl lovers ages 6 and older, including teens and adults, the presentation explores the fascinating world of owls while dispelling many of the myths surrounding these nocturnal birds. Guests will discover how owls use their extraordinary eyesight, hearing, and nearly silent flight to survive and thrive as nighttime hunters, while learning about the history, folklore, and science behind these remarkable raptors. A variety of live owls will be featured during the presentation. Wingmasters is a partnership between licensed Massachusetts wildlife rehabilitators Julie Ann Collier and Jim Parks. Together, they care for injured birds of prey at their private center in Leverett, releasing as many as possible back into the wild. Birds that cannot be released because of permanent injuries are given lifelong homes and serve as educational ambassadors during presentations throughout New England. Since 1994, Wingmasters has presented more than 10,000 programs at schools, libraries, museums, and community organizations across the region. Wow. And if you want more information on Wingmasters, visit their website, wingmasters.net. Okay. Okay, here's Sally Cragen's Pet Talk column. This one is here. Dear Pet Talk, what is the oldest dog breed? It's signed Dog Historian. Dear Dog Historian, we have answered questions about many dogs throughout the seasons, but the oldest dog breed question means we need research, archaeology, as well as canine genetics. The human-animal bond goes back a long way, and recent genetic studies show that distinct breeds of dogs lived with human companions around 15,800 years ago during the last ice age. Wow. A burial site in Anatolia, or Asia Minor, included bones of a canine who was buried alongside humans. And this March, scientists re-examined an ancient dog's jawbone found at Goff's Cage, Cheddar Gorge, Somerset, England, a century ago. This bone had been stored in a drawer, and current DNA testing concluded that the bone was approximately 14,000 years old. That means that 1,500 years after the Anatolian bone, humans and dogs had traveled thousands of miles and lived together long before humans began farming and settling in villages built around agriculture. Wow. Wouldn't you love to see what those ancient dogs looked like? Chances are they looked similar to the following breeds, which are generally agreed to be the 10 oldest varieties of dogs. I love that oldest dog breeds span the globe. We'll start in Asia. The Chow Chow, or lion dog, from China originated some 8,300 years ago, making the Japanese Akita Inu comparably recent. that that pooch turns up in written records from the 1600s. In Siberia, the sled dog, Nenets Leka, is one of the oldest breeds in cold climates. These handsome, fluffy working dogs nearly died out in the 1900s when snowmobiles began to replace them. Fortunately, dog lovers worked to bring the breed back, and some 2,000 purebred Nenet Lekas exist today. We assume Seleucus, Afghan hounds, and greyhounds originated in the Middle East because these thin, swift dogs are depicted in ancient art. The remains of either a Seleuci or a greyhound was excavated in modern-day Syria and show that the breed was present 4,000 years ago. In Africa, the Basenji, or a dog similar, is shown in Libya and Egyptian artwork dating back 5,000 to 8,000 years. In the New World, the Peruvian hairless dog, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, but it begins with an X and it ends with an L, have been bred from earlier dogs from Siberia. Scientists estimate those dogs were then isolated 9,000 years, during which time dog lovers bred a very small, old species. Spanish invaders noted Inca people had the Peruvian hairless and the Aztec had small hairless dogs. However, most scientists agree that the Greenland dog, which is similar to a husky but larger, is the most ancient, dating back 11,500 years. The Thule people brought this working dog to Greenland 1,000 years ago. Because they were kept isolated from other breeds, they are undoubtedly among the oldest, and the Guinness Book of World Records says the Greenland dog gets the trophy for the most ancient. Okay. And let's see. From Fitchburg, River Street Bridge nearing completion, a major step forward. Mayor Sam Squillier recently reported that the River Street Bridge replacement project is tentatively projected to be completed by Labor Day at the latest. That means we're hoping the bridge may be open in just a few short weeks in August, she posted on social media on July 28th, along with photos of the work. Squillier shared that the bridge project formally began when MassDOT issued its notice to proceed on January 10th, 2024. Major on-site construction and the one-way traffic pattern began in June 2024, and the awarded construction bid was $6,339,000. The bridge is close to downtown on River Street, Route 31, near the intersection of Main Street and River Street, and the new roundabout that is near Crocker Field and the Department of Public Works garage. The street has been restricted to one-way traffic during construction, forcing cars going west to take a circuitous detour. MassDOT's lists the project's funding source as non-federal aid, meaning the bridge construction contract is being funded through Commonwealth transportation funds rather than federal funding, Squillier relayed. The full bridge replacement project includes a new bridge structure, new roadway approaches and sidewalks, utility and infrastructure coordination, and paving. Squillier went on to say that in the original contract, the opening was listed for June 2027. If this timeline holds, the reopening would be approximately 9 months ahead of schedule, and we could not be more pleased with that progress, she wrote in her post. Bridge projects are complicated, expensive, and disruptive, and we know this closure has affected residents, commuters, businesses, and the surrounding neighborhood. But seeing this project move toward reopening this far ahead of the original schedule is a major step forward. In her post, she shared an old photo of the bridge taken by Jason Kleppner in 1893, with a trolley crossing the bridge and to the right a brick building that was once a blacksmith shop, and later the site of the first Dillon Boiler Works. Then and now, this bridge has been part of Fitchburg's story for a very long time, Squillier conveyed. We're looking forward to getting River Street connected and reopened soon. More updates will be shared the closer we get to the reopening date. Okay. I think we have time for one more here. Red Apple Farm plans to hold Maryland artist Eli Lev August, or host Maryland artist Levi Lev, Eli Lev, August 11th. This from Phillipston. Singer-songwriter Eli Lev, known for his messages of peace and harmony, will be playing in the Barn at Red Apple Farm on Highland Avenue on Tuesday, August 11th at 6 p.m. According to a press release, the Maryland-based artist pens lyrics and melodies for everyday enlightenment, songs that resonate because they're heartfelt, earthy, and offer the wisdom he's gained through lifelong travel and self-discovery. Eli has performed in places all around the world and across the United States, including Andorra, Arkansas, Australia, California, Colorado, France, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, a whole bunch of places. Yeah. His previous release, The Four Directions Project, is pitched as irresistibly uplifting, emotionally relevant, and down to earth. Okay. Cross between Avett Brothers and the Lumineers, Lev has opened for both Shooter Jennings and Lee DeWise and performed at the Kennedy Center and 930 Club in Washington, D.C. Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's probably all the time we have at this point. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Priscilla Lanigan. Thank you for listening. And up next will be community news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough. And I think that's all the time we have. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
The Attorney General's Office is an advocate and resource for all residents of Massachusetts. The Attorney General's Office protects consumers, combats fraud and corruption, and investigates crime and prosecutes criminals. Additionally, it protects the environment, workers, and civil rights. For more information, or if you need to file a complaint, call 617-727-2200.
This is Bird Noir. I'm Private Eye Michael Stein. Every good investigator knows to stay vigilant for suspicious behavior. But a call from my old friend Cora reminded me that there's often more to a bird than meets the eye.
Michael, I just found the strangest bird. He looked like a crow, but sounded all wrong.
That does seem odd, Cora. Could he be a common raven? They look like giant crows that sound deep and croaky.
No, his calls were more short and nasal. I even said to him, what, you got a cold or something? And that bird called back to me saying, uh-uh. I mean, the whole thing seems fishy to me.
Fishy is right, but not for the reason you think. In most of the U.S., the American crow is the only crow in town. That's the caw you're probably used to. But on the Atlantic coast, and parts of the Midwest too, the fish crow is a common city bird. The two species look the same, but the fish crow's nasal caw is unmistakable.
Huh? I had no idea there were two kinds of crows.
Actually, there are more than 30 species worldwide.
Okay, wise guy. I'll drop you a line if any of them come cawing.
Yep, another case closed. For Bird Noir, I'm Private Eye Michael Stein.
Hello. A lot of people are familiar with various assistance programs that provide support for folks with disabilities, money troubles, or food insecurity. But did you know there's one organization which does good work on all three fronts? Welcome to the Department of Transitional Assistance. The DTA serves 1 in 7 residents of the Commonwealth with direct economic assistance like cash benefits and SNAP food assistance, as well as workforce training opportunities. Those served by the department include children, elders, and people with disabilities. And despite the misconceptions you might have heard, many of those who receive benefits from the government work regularly and are gainfully employed. The DTA mission is to assist and empower low-income individuals and families to meet their basic needs, to improve their quality of life, and achieve long-term economic self-sufficiency. The DTA assistance line is open from 8:15 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. That number is 877-382-2363. 877-382-2363.